The man of Tao acts without impediment, harms no other being by his actions, yet he does not know himself to be kind and gentle. He does not struggle to make money, and he does not make a virtue of poverty. He goes his way without relying on others, and does not pride himself on walking alone. The man of Tao remains unknown. Perfect virtue produces nothing. No self is true self, and the greatest man is nobody.
The most difficult thing, almost the impossible for the mind, is to remain in the middle, is to remain balanced, to move from one thing to its opposite is the easiest, to move from one polarity to the opposite polarity is the nature of the mind. This has to be understood very deeply, because unless you understand this, nothing can lead you into meditation. Mind, its nature, is to move from one extreme to another. It depends on imbalance. If you are balanced, mind disappears. Mind is like a disease. When you are imbalanced, it is there. When you are balanced, it is not there. That's why it is easy for a person who overeats to go on a fast. It looks illogical, because we think a person who is obsessed with food cannot go on a fast. Then you are wrong. Only a person who is obsessed with food can go on a fast, because fast is in the opposite direction, the same obsession. It is not really changing yourself. You are again obsessed with food. Before you were overeating, now you are remaining hungry, but the mind remains focused on the food from the very extreme, opposite extreme. A man who has been overindulging in sex can become a celibate very easily. There is no problem. But it is difficult for the mind to come to the right diet, difficult for the mind to stay in the middle. Why it is difficult to stay in the middle? It is just like a pendulum of a clock. The pendulum goes to the right, then it moves to the left, then again to the right, then again to the left. The whole clock depends on this movement. If the pendulum stays in the middle, the clock stops. And when the pendulum is going to the right, you think it is going to the right, but at the same time it is gathering momentum to go to the left. The more it moves to the right, the more energy it gathers to move to the left, to the opposite. When it is moving to the left, it is again gathering momentum to move to the right. Whenever you are overeating, you are gathering momentum to go on a fast. Whenever you are overindulging in sex, sooner or later, Brahmacharya will appear. Celibacy will appear. And the same is happening from the opposite pole. Go and ask your so-called sadhus, your bhikkhus, your sannyasins. they have made a point to remain celibate. Now their mind is gathering momentum to move into sex. They have made it a point to remain more and more hungry and starving. Their mind is constantly thinking about food. When you are too much thinking about food, it shows that you are gathering momentum for it. Thinking means momentum. The mind starts arranging for the opposite. One thing. Whenever you move, you are also moving to the opposite. The opposite is hidden. It is not apparent. When you love a person, you are gathering momentum to hate him. That's why only friends can become enemies. You cannot suddenly become an enemy unless you have first become a friend. Lovers quarrel, fight. Only lovers can quarrel and fight. Because unless you love, how can you hate? Unless you have moved to the far extreme in the left, how can you move to the right? Modern research says that the so-called love is a relationship of intimate enmity. Your wife is your intimate enemy. Your husband is your intimate enemy. Intimate and enemy both, they appear opposites. Illogical, because we think one who is intimate, how he can be the enemy? One who is a friend, how he can also be the foe? Logic is superficial. Life goes deeper. And in life, all opposites are joined together. They adjust together. Remember this. Because then meditation becomes balancing. Buddha has taught 8 disciplines. And with every discipline, he always uses the word right. He says, right effort. Because it is very easy to move from action to inaction, from waking to sleep. But to remain in the middle is difficult. When Buddha uses the word right, he is saying, don't move to the opposite. Just remain in the middle. Right foot. He never says fast. Don't indulge in too much eating and don't indulge in fasting. He says rice, foot. Right foot means standing in the middle. When you are standing in the middle, you are not gathering any momentum. And this is the beauty. A man who is not gathering any momentum to move anywhere can be at ease with himself, can be at home. You can never be at home. Because whatsoever you do, you will have to do the opposite immediately to balance. And opposite never balances. It simply gives you an idea that you may be getting balanced. But again, you will have to move to the opposite. A Buddha is neither a friend to anyone, nor an enemy. He has simply stopped in the middle. The clock is not functioning. It is said about one Hasid, mystic, Majid, then when he attained enlightenment, suddenly his clock on the wall stopped. It may have happened, it may not happen, because it is possible. But the symbol is clear. When your mind stops, time stops. When the pendulum stops, the clock stops. Then the clock never moved. Then it always showed the same time. Time is created by the movement of the mind, just like the movement of the pendulum. Mind moves, you feel time. When mind is non-moving, how you can feel time? When there is no movement, time cannot be felt. So scientists, mystics agree on this point, that movement creates the phenomena of time. If you are not moving, if you are still, time disappears. Eternity comes into existence. Your clock is moving fast, and the mechanism is from one extreme to another. How to move from one extreme to another? Second thing to be understood about mind is that the mind always longs for the distant, never for the near. The near gives you boredom. You are fed up with it. The distant gives you dream, hope, possibility of pleasure. So always the mind is thinking of the distant. It is always somebody else's wife which is attractive, beautiful. It is always somebody else's house which obsesses you. It is always somebody else's car that fascinates you. It is always the distant. You are blind to the near. The mind cannot see which is very near. It can only see which is very far. And what is very far, the most distant, the opposite, is the most distant. You love a person. Now, hatred is the most distant phenomenon. You are overeating. Now, fasting is the most distant phenomenon. You are a celibate. Now, sex is the most distant phenomenon. You are a king. Now, to be a monk is the most distant phenomenon. The most distant is most dreamy. It attracts. It obsesses. It goes on calling, inviting you. And when you have reached to the other pole, this place from where you have traveled will become again beautiful. Divorce your wife, and after a few years, the wife has again gained beauty. One film actress came to me. She divorced her husband 15 years back. Now she is old, less beautiful than she was when the husband and she separated. Their son was to be married last year. So in the marriage, she met the husband again, and they had to travel together. The husband fell again in love with her. So she came to me and asked, what should I do? Because now he is proposing again. He wants to get married to me again. And she was also fascinated. She was waiting just for me to say yes. I said, but you live together. There was always conflict and nothing else. I know the whole story. how you were fighting, quarreling, how you were creating hell and misery for each other. Now again, the distant always becomes fascinating. You can move into the same rut. And then again, you will start thinking of the opposite. Remember, mind always thinks of the opposite, always fascinated with the opposite. So if you are rich, you will have a fascination for poverty. All rich people think that poverty has such a freedom no rich man can enjoy. Whenever a king passes and he looks at a beggar sleeping under the tree, the traffic moves, but he is not disturbed. He can sleep even in the market. What beautiful sleep! And the king feels jealous. Kings are always jealous of beggars. And kings always dream that they have become monks, sannyasins. It is not a coincidence that Mahavir, Buddha, all the Tirthankaras of Jains are kings. They come from the palaces. They have left the kingdom. For a king, the beggar is always the attraction. This country has been the country of kings and beggars, both. At the one extreme, kings have existed. At the another extreme, the beggars. And we have raised beggars to the highest peak of glory. Buddha called his sannyasins, bhikkhus, beggars. He was a king. He was fed up with all that being a king implies. He was fascinated with the simple life, the innocent life of a beggar. But ask some beggars, he's not happy. If kings are not happy, how beggars can be happy? He is unhappy, and he is just waiting for the chance when he can also become a king. Go into his dreams, and you will find him always becoming an emperor. Beggars dream of kingdoms. Kings dreams of becoming sannyasins, renouncing everything. Beggars dream of possessing the whole world. Kings dream of not possessing anything at all. The opposite for the mind is magnetic. And unless through understanding you transcend this, the mind will go on moving from left to right, from right to left, and the clock will continue. It has continued for many lives. This is how you have been deceiving yourself, because you don't understand the mechanism. Again the distant becomes appealing. You again start traveling. The moment you have reached that which was with you, now is distant. It appears. It becomes a star, something worth. I was reading about one pilot. He was flying on California with a friend. He told the friend that, look down that beautiful lake. I was born near it. That's my village. He pointed to a small village just perched in the hills near the lake. And he said, I was born there. When I was a child, I used to sit near the lake and fish. Fishing was my hobby. But at that time, when I was a child and fishing near the lake, always aeroplanes used to move in the sky, pass, and I would dream the day when I will become a pilot myself. And I will be piloting an aeroplane. That was my only dream. Now it is fulfilled. And what misery. Now I am continuously looking down at the lake and thinking when I will get retired and go fishing again. That lake is so beautiful. This is how things are happening. This is how things are happening to you. In childhood, you learn to grow fast. Because elder people are more powerful, young men more powerful. A child learns just to grow immediately. Old people are wise. And the child feels that whatsoever he is doing is always wrong. Then ask the old man. He always thinks when childhood was lost, everything was lost. The paradise was there in childhood. And all the old men die thinking of childhood, the innocence, the beauty, the dreamland. Whatsoever you have looks useless. Whatsoever you don't have looks useful. Remember this, otherwise there cannot happen meditation. Because meditation means this understanding of the mind, the working of the mind, the very process of the mind. Mind is dialectical. It makes you again and again move towards the opposite. And this is an infinite process. It never ends. Unless you suddenly drop out of it. Unless you suddenly become aware of the game. Unless you suddenly become aware of the trickery. The trick of the mind. And you stop in the middle. Stopping in the middle is meditation. Thirdly, because mind consists of polarities, you are never whole. The mind cannot be whole. It is always half. When you love someone, have you observed that you are suppressing your hatred? The love is not total. It is not whole. Just behind it, all the dark forces are hidden. They may erupt any moment. You are sitting on a volcano. When you love someone, you simply forget that you have anger, you have hate, you have jealousy. You simply drop as if they never existed. But how can you drop them? You can simply hide them into the unconscious. You can just on the surface become loving. Deep down the turmoil is hidden. Sooner or later, when you are fed up, when the beloved has become familiar, and the same familiarity breeds contempt. Not that familiarity breeds contempt. Familiarity makes you bored. Contempt had always been there hidden. It comes up. It was waiting for the right moment. The seed was there. The mind always has the opposite within it. And that opposite goes into the unconscious and waits for its moment to come up. If you observe minutely, you will feel it every moment. When you say to someone, I love you, close your eyes, be meditative, and feel, is there any hatred hidden? You will feel it. But because you want to deceive yourself, because the truth is so ugly, that you hate a person you love, You don't want to face it. You want to escape from the facticity. So you hide it. But hiding won't help. Because it is not deceiving somebody else, it is deceiving yourself. So whenever you feel something, just close the eyes and go into yourself to find the opposite. Somewhere it is there. And if you can see the opposite, that will give you a balance. Then you will not say that I love you. If you are true, you will say my relationship is of a love-hate. All relationships are love-hate relationships. No relationship is of pure love, and no relationship is of pure hate. It is love-hate, both. If you are true, but then you will be in difficulty, because if you say to a girl that my relationship is of love-hate, both, I love you as I have never loved anybody, and I hate you as I have never loved them, never hate anybody, then it is difficult to get into marriage. Unless you find a meditative girl who can understand the reality. Unless you can find a friend who can understand the complexity of the mind. Mind is not a simple mechanism, very complex. And through mind you can never become simple. Because mind goes on creating deceptions. To be meditative means to be aware of the fact that mind is hiding something from yourself. You are closing your eyes for some facts which are disturbing. Then, sooner or later, those disturbing facts will erupt, overpower you, and you will move to the opposite. The opposite is not there in the distant, faraway place, in some star. The opposite is hidden behind, in you, in your mind, in the very functioning of the mind. If you can understand this, you will stop in the middle. If you can see I love and I hate, suddenly both will disappear. Because both cannot exist together in the consciousness. You have to create a barrier. One has to exist in the unconscious and one in the conscious. Both cannot exist in the conscious. If both exist, they will negate each other. The love will destroy hate, the hate will destroy love. They will balance each other, they will simply disappear. The same amount of hate and the same amount of love, they will negate each other. Suddenly, they will evaporate. You will be there, but no love and no hate. Then you are balanced. But when you are balanced, mind is not there. Then you are whole. When you are whole, you are holy, but mind is not there. So meditation is a state of no mind. Through mind it is not achieved. Through mind, whatsoever you do, it can never be achieved. Then what you are doing when you are meditating? Because you have created so much tension in your life, now you are meditating. This is the opposite of tension, not real meditation. You are so tense, meditation has become attractive. That's why in the West, meditation is appealing more than in the East. Because more tension exists there than in the East. East is still relaxed. People are not so tense. They don't go so easily mad. They don't commit so easily suicide. They are not so violent, not so aggressive. not so scared, not so fearful. No, they are not so tense. They are not living in such a mad speed where nothing else is accumulated. So if Mahesh Yogi comes to India, nobody listens. But in America, people are mad after him. When there is much tension, meditation will appear. But this appeal is again falling into the same trap. This is not real meditation. This is again a trick. Then you meditate for a few days, you become relaxed. When you become relaxed, again activity arises and the mind starts thinking to do something. To move, you get bored with it. People come to me and they say, we meditated for a few years. Then it became a boring thing. Then there was no more fun. Just the other day, one girl came and she was saying, now meditation is no more fun, what should I do? Now the mind is seeking something else. Now enough. Now she is at ease. Now the mind is asking for more tenses. Something to get disturbed. What she means when she says that now meditation is no more fun. Now the tension is not there. So how the meditation can be a fun? She will have to move into tension again. Then meditation will become again something worth. Look at the absurdity of the mind. You have to go away to come near. You have to become tense to be meditative. But this is not meditation then. Then again this is a trick of the same mind on a new level. The same game continues. When I say meditation, I mean going beyond the game of the polar opposites, dropping out of the whole game, looking at the absurdity of it and transcending it. The very understanding becomes transcendence. Don't move to the opposite. Mind will force you to move to the opposite. Stop in the middle and look that this has been always the trick of the mind. This is how mind has dominated you. Throw the opposite. Have you felt it? Whenever you make love to a woman, after it, suddenly you start thinking of Brahmacharya. Suddenly, you start thinking of Brahmacharya. And Brahmacharya has such alluring fascination at that moment. You feel as there is nothing else to achieve. You feel frustrated, deceived. You feel there was nothing in this sex. Only Brahmacharya has the bliss. But after 24 hours, again sex becomes important, significant. Again you have to move into it. What the mind is doing? After the sex act, it started thinking about the opposite. That is creating taste again for sex. A violent man starts thinking about non-violence. Then he can be violent again easily. A man who gets angry again and again always thinks of non-anger. Always decides not to be angry again. This decision helps him to be angry again. If you really want not to be angry again, don't decide against anger. Just look in the anger and just look at the shadow of the anger which you think it is non-anger. Look into sex and at the shadow of sex which you think is Brahmacharya celibacy. It is just the negativity, the absence. Look at overeating and the shadow of it, which is fasting, which is following it. Fasting always follows overeating. Overindulgence is always followed by vows of celibacy. Tension always followed by some techniques of meditation. Look them at them together. Feel they are related. They are part of one process. If you can understand this, meditation will happen to you. Really, it is nothing, something to be done. It is a point of understanding. It is not an effort. It is nothing to be cultivated. It is something to be deeply understood. Understanding gives freedom. Knowledge is transformation. Knowledge of the whole mechanism of the mind. Then suddenly the clock stops. Time disappears. And with the stopping of the clock, there is no mind. And with the stopping of time, where you are, the boat is empty. Now we will enter this sutra of Chanka Sutra. The man of Tao acts without impediment, harms no other being by his actions, yet he does not know himself to be kind and gentle. The man of Tao acts without impediment. You act always with impediment. The opposite is always there, creating the impediment. You are not a flow. You love. The hate is always there as an impediment. You move, but something is holding you back. You never move totally. Something is always left. The movement is not total. You move with one leg. The other leg is not moving. How can you move? The impediment is there. And this impediment, this continuous moving of the half and non-moving of the other half is your anguish, your anxiety. Why you are so much in anguish? What creates so much anxiety in you? Whatsoever you do, why bliss is not happening through it? Bliss can happen only to the whole, never to the part. When the whole moves without any impediment, the very movement is bliss. Bliss is not something that comes from outside. It is the feeling that comes when your whole being moves. The very movement of the whole is bliss. It is not something happening to you. It arises out of you. It is a harmony in your being. If you are divided, and you are always divided, half moving, half withholding, half saying yes, half saying no, half in love, half in hate, you are a divided kingdom. There is a constant conflict in you. You say something, you never mean it, because the opposite is there impending, creating a hindrance. Baal Singh used to say, his disciples used to write whatsoever he will talk. And he used to say, I know whatsoever you are writing is not what has been said by me. You have heard something else. I have said something else. You are writing still something else. And if you look at the meaning is still something else. And you will do never what you have written. You will do something else. Fragments, not the integrated being. Why these fragments are there? Have you heard the story about a centipede? A centipede was walking. Centipede has 100 legs. That's why he is called centipede. It is a miracle to walk with 100 feet. Even to manage two is so difficult. To manage 100 legs is really impossible, almost impossible. But the centipede has been maintaining it. One fox became curious, and foxes are curious. Fox is the symbol in folklore of the mind, of the intellect, of the logic. Foxes are great logicians. She looked, she observed, she analyzed, she couldn't believe. She said, wait, one question, how you manage and how you know that which feet has to follow which 100 legs? How this harmony happens and you walk so smoothly? The centipede said, I have been walking, but I have never thought about it. Give me a little time. So he closed his eyes. For the first time, he became divided. The mind as observer and himself as the observed. The centipede for the first time became two. He was walking, living, but the life was one whole. There was not an observer standing, looking at himself. He was never divided. He had been an integrated being. For the first time, division arose. He was looking, thinking at his own self. He became subject and object. He became two. And then he started walking. It was difficult, almost impossible. He fell down. Because how to manage 100 legs? The fox laughed and said, I knew. It must be difficult. I knew beforehand. The centipede started crying and weeping, and tears came to his eyes. And he said, it has never been difficult, but you have created the problem. Now, I will never be able to walk again. The mind has come into being. Mind comes when you are divided. Mind feeds on division. Hence, Krishnamurti goes on saying, that when the observer has become the observed, you are in meditation. The opposite happened to this centipede. The wholeness was lost. He became two, the observer and the observed, divided, the subject and the object, the thinker and the thought. Then everything was disturbed. Then bliss was lost. Then the flow stopped. Then he got frozen. Whenever mind comes, it comes as a controlling force, manager. It is not the master, it is the manager. And you cannot get to the master unless this manager is put aside. The manager won't allow you to reach to the master. The manager will always be standing in the door and managing. And all managers only mismanage. and mind has done such a great job of mismanaged. Poor centipede. He had always been happy. There was not a problem at all. He has lived. He has moved. He has loved. Everything. There was no problem at all because there was no mind. Mind came in with the problem, with the question, with the inquiry. And there are many foxes around you. Beware of them. Philosophers, theologians, logicians, professors, all around foxes. And they ask you questions. And they create disturbance. Chuang Tzu's master Lao Tse has said, when there was not a single philosopher, everything was solved. There were no questions and all answers were available. When philosophers arose, questions came and answers disappeared. Whenever there is a question, answer is very far away. Whenever you ask, you will never get the answer. When you stop asking, the answer has always been there. I don't know what happened to this centipede. If he was as foolish as human beings, he would be somewhere in a hospital, crippled, paralyzed, forever. But I don't think that centipedes are so foolish. He must have thrown the question. He must have told to the fox, keep your question to yourself and let me walk. He must have come to know that division won't allow me to live, because division creates death. Undivided you are life, divided you become dead. More divided, more dead. What is bliss? Bliss is the feeling that comes to you when the observer has become the observed. Bliss is the feeling which comes to you when you are in harmony, not fragmented, one. Not disintegrated, not divided, undivided one. Feeling is not something that happens from the outside. It is the knowledge that arises out of your inner harmoniousness. Says Chuang Tzu, the man of Tao acts without impediment because he is not divided. So who is there to impede? What is there to function as an impediment? He is alone. He moves with his wholeness. This movement in wholeness is the greatest beauty that can happen, that is possible. Sometimes you have glimpses of it. Sometimes when you are suddenly whole, when the mind is not functioning, it happens sometimes. The sun is rising and you suddenly look and the observer is not there. The sun is not there and you are not here. There is no observer and no observed. Simply the sun is rising and your mind is not there to manage. You don't see. And you don't say, the sun is beautiful. The moment you say, the bliss is lost. Then there is no bliss. It has already become past. It is already gone. When suddenly you see at the sun rising and the seer is not there, it has not come into being yet. It has not become a thought. You have not looked. You have not analyzed. You have not observed the sun is rising and there is no one, the boat is empty. There is bliss, a glimpse. But the mind immediately comes in and he says the sun is beautiful. This sunrise is so beautiful. The comparison has come in and the beauty is lost. Those who know this say, whenever you say to a person, I love you, the love is lost. It is always said when the love is already gone. Because the lover has come in, how the love can exist? Already the division has come in. The manager has come in. The mind says, I love you, because in love there is no I and no thou. In love, there are no individuals. Love is a melting, a merging. They are not two. Love exists, not the lovers. In love, love exists, not the lovers. But the mind comes in and says, I'm in love. I love you. When I comes, thou enters. Division has come in. And love is no more there. You will come many times to such glimpses in your meditation. Remember, whenever you feel such a glimpse, don't say, how beautiful. Don't say, how lovely. Because this is how you will lose it. Whenever the glimpse comes, let the glimpse be there. Don't do the thing that the centipede did. Don't raise any question. Don't make any observation. Don't analyze. Don't allow the mind to come in. Walk with 100 legs, but don't think how you are walking. When in meditation you have the glimpse of some ecstasy, let it happen. Let it go deep. Don't divide yourself. Don't make any statement. Otherwise, the contact is lost. Sometimes you have glimpses, but you have become so efficient in losing your contact with those glimpses that you cannot understand how they come and how you lose them again. They come when you are not. You lose them when you come again. When you are, they are not. When the boat is empty, bliss is always happening. It is not an accident. It is the very nature of existence. It doesn't depend on anything. It is sovereign. It is the very breath of life. This is really a miracle, how you have managed to be so miserable, so thirsty, and it is raining all over. It is really something impossible that you have done. It is everywhere light and you live in darkness. Death is nowhere and you are constantly dying. Life is a benediction and you are in hell. How you have managed it? Through division, through thinking. Thinking depends on division analysis. Meditation is when there is no analysis, no division, when everything has become synthetic, when everything has become one. Says Lao Tzu, the man of Tao acts without impediment. Harms no other being by his actions. How he can harm? You can harm others only when you have already harmed yourself. Remember this. This is the secret. If you harm yourself, you will harm others. And you will harm even when you think you are doing good to others. You will harm. Nothing can happen throw you only harm. Because one who lives with wounds, one who lives in anguish and misery, whatsoever he is going to do will create more misery and anguish for others. Because you can give only that which you have got. I have heard, once it happened in a synagogue, one beggar came and he told to the rabbi that I am a great musician, and I have heard that the musician who belonged to this synagogue is dead, and you are in search. So I offer myself. The rabbi was happy. The congregation was happy, because really they were missing. The man played, but he was horrible. It was more musical without his music. He created a hell. It was impossible to feel any silence in that synagogue that morning. He had to be stopped, because almost the congregation started to leave. People escaped as fast as they could, because his music was just anarchic. It was like madness. And it started to affect people. When the rabbi felt that everybody is already leaving, he went to him and stopped him. The man said, if you don't want, then you can pay for this morning, and I will go. The rabbi said, it is impossible to pay. It has been such a horrible thing we have never experienced. Then the man said, the musician said, okay, then keep it as a contribution from me. The rabbi said, but how can you contribute if you don't have got it already with you? You don't have any music at all, how can you contribute? You can contribute only when you have got it. This is no music. Rather, on the contrary, it is something like anti-music. You please take it with yourself. Don't contribute it to us. Otherwise, it will go on haunting us. You give only that which you have. You always give your being, really. If you are dead within, you cannot help life. Wherever you go, you will kill. Knowingly, unknowingly, that's not the point. You may think that you are helping others to live, but still you will kill. One great psychoanalyst, Wilhelm Reich, was asked once, because he was studying children, their problems. He was asked, what is the most basic problem with children? What you find at the root of all their misery and problems, abnormalities? He said, the mothers. No mother can agree to this, because every mother is just helping the children without any selfishness on her part. She is living and dying for the child. And psychoanalysts say, mothers are the problem. Unknowingly, they are killing, crippling. Knowingly, they think they are loving. If you are crippled within, you will cripple your children. You cannot do anything else. You can't help. Because you give out of your being. There is no other way to give. Says Chuang Tzu, The man of power harms no other being by his actions. Not that he cultivates non-violence. Not that he cultivates compassion. Not that he lives a good life. Not that he behaves in a saintly way. No. He cannot harm because he has stopped harming himself. He has no wounds. He is so blissful that by his actions or inactions, only bliss flows. Even sometimes, it may appear that he is doing something wrong he cannot do. It is just the opposite of you. Sometimes it appears you are doing something good you cannot do. The man of Tao cannot do harm. It is impossible. There is no way to do it. It is inconceivable. Because he is without divisions, fragments. He is not a crowd. He is not polypsychic. He is a universe now. And nothing else than knowledge is happening inside. Only this music can go on spreading. The man of Tao is not of much actions. He is not a man of action. The least action happens to him. He is really a man of inaction. He is not much occupied with activity. Because you are occupied with activity just to escape from yourself. You cannot tolerate yourself. You cannot tolerate the company of yourself. You go on looking for somebody as an escape, some occupation, where you can forget yourself, where you can get involved. You are so much bored with yourself. A man of Tao, a man who has attained the inner nature, a man who is really religious, is not a man of much activity. Only the necessary will happen. Unnecessary is cut completely. Because he can be at ease without activity. He can be at home without doing anything. He can relax. He can be a company to himself. He can be with himself. You cannot be with yourself. Hence the constant urge to seek company. Go to a club. Go to a meeting. Go to a party rally. Move into the crowd where you are not alone. You are so afraid of yourself. If you are left alone, you will go mad. Just 3 weeks. If you are left absolutely alone without any activity, you will go mad. And this is not something said by religious people now. Psychologists agree to it. Only 3 weeks. All activity taken from you. All company taken away. You are left in a room. Within 3 weeks you will be mad. Because all your activity is just to throw your madness. It is a catharsis. What you will do when you are alone? First 3-4 days you will dream and talk within. An inner chattering. Then this will become a boring thing. After the first week, you will start talking loudly. Because at least you can hear your own voice. It happens if you are passing through a dark street in the night, you start whistling. Why? How this whistling is going to give you courage? How this whistling is going to help you? But just listening to it, you feel you are not alone. Somebody is whistling. The illusion of two is created. After the first week, you will start talking loud, because then you can listen also. You are not alone. You are talking and you are listening, as if somebody else is talking to you. After the second week, you will start answering yourself. You will not only talk, you will answer. You are divided. Now you are two. One who questions, one who answers. Now there is a dialogue. You have gone completely crazy. One man was asking to his psychiatrist that I am very much worried. I talk to myself. What should I do? Can you help me? The psychiatrist said that this is nothing to be worried about. Everybody talks to himself. Only when you start answering, then come to me. This is not a big question. Everybody talks to himself. But when you start answering also, then come to me. Then I can be of help. But the difference is only of degrees. It is not of kind. It is only of quantity. If you start talking to yourself, sooner or later you will start answering also. Because how one can go on simply talking? The answer is needed. Otherwise you will feel foolish. The third week you start answering. You have gone crazy. This world, the world of activity, business and occupation, saves you from the madhouse. You are occupied, energy moves out. You need not care about the inner world. The inner world. You can forget it. A man of Tao is not a man of much activity, only the essential activity. It is said of Chuang Tzu that if he could stand, he will not walk. If he could sit, he will not stand. If he could fall asleep, he will not sit. The essential, the most essential, only the must he will do. Because there is no madness in it. You do the non-essential. You go on doing non-essential. Look at your activities. 99% is non-essential. You can drop it. You can save much energy. You can save much time. But you cannot drop it because you are afraid, you are scared of yourself. If there is no radio, no television, no newspaper, nobody to talk to, what you will do? I have heard one man died, a priest. Of course, he expected to go to the paradise, to heaven. And he reached. And everything was beautiful. The house he entered was one of the most wonderful ever dreamed. Palace. And the moment a desire came in, immediately a servant will appear. He was hungry. A servant was there with the food. The most delicious he has ever tasted. He was feeling thirsty, the desire was there, not even the desire has not become yet a thought, just the feeling, and a man will appear with drinks. So it continued. He was very happy. 2-3 days, and then he began to feel uneasy. Because a man has to do something. You cannot just sit in a chair. Only a man of Tao can just sit in the chair and go on sitting and sitting and sitting. You cannot sit in a chair. The man became uneasy. 2-3 days it is okay as a holiday, as a rest. And he has been so much in activity, so much public service, mission, church. He was a priest talking sermons, and he was so much involved with the society and the community. So he rested. But how much you can rest? Unless your being is at rest, sooner or later the holiday ends and you have to come back to the world. Uneasiness arose. He started feeling uncomfort. Suddenly the servant appeared and he asked, "What do you want?" Because this is not a want. You are neither thirsty nor hungry. Just uneasy. So what should I do? So the man said, "I want some activity. I cannot sit here forever and forever, for eternity." The servant said, "That's impossible. Your desires will be fulfilled. And what is the need of any activity when every desire is to be fulfilled by us? For what you need activity? So it is not provided here." The man became very uneasy and he said, "What type of heaven is this?" The man said, "Who says this is a heaven? This is a hell." "Who told you this is a heaven?" And really, this is a hell. Now he understood. Without activity, this is a hell. He must have got mad sooner or later. No congregation to talk. No social service to be done. No pagans to be converted to Christianity. No foolish people to be made wise. What to do? Only a man of Tao could have changed that hell into a heaven. A man of Tao, wherever he is at peace, at ease. Only the essential is done. And if you can do the essential for him, he is happy. The non-essential is dropped. You cannot drop the non-essential. Really, your 99% energy is wasted for the non-essential. Because the essential is not enough. And the mind always hankers for the non-essential. Because essential is so little, so small, it can be fulfilled easily, then what to do? So people are not much interested in having good food. They are more interested in having a big car. Because good food can be attained very easily, then what? People are not interested in having good, healthy bodies that can be attained very easily. They are interested in something which cannot be attained so easily. Something impossible. And the non-essential is always the impossible. Because there are bigger houses, bigger cars, they go on getting bigger and bigger, and you are never allowed to rest. The whole world is trying to fulfill the non-essential. If you look at the industries, 90% industries are involved with the non-essential. 50% of human labor is wasted just for that which is not useful in any way. 50% industry is devoted to the feminine mind, rather feminine body. Designing new dresses every 3 months. Designing new houses, clothes, powders, soaps, creams, 50% industry devoted to such nonsense. And the humanity is starving, and people are dying without food, and half of the humanity is interested in something absolutely non-essential. To reach to the moon is absolutely non-essential. If we were a little wiser, we would not think about it. It is absolutely foolish. Wasting so much money which can feed the whole earth. Wars are unessential. But humanity is mad and it needs wars more than food. It needs to go to the moon more than food, more than clothes, more than the essential. Because the essential is not enough. And now science has created the greatest horror. And that horror is that the essential can be fulfilled very easily. Within 10 years, all the needs can be fulfilled of the whole humanity. This whole earth can be satisfied as far as the necessities are concerned. Then what? Then what you will do? You will feel in the same position. The priest found himself. He was thinking this is a heaven, and then he found this is a hell. Within 10 years, the whole earth can become a hell. The non-essential is needed for your madness to remain engaged. So moons are not enough. We will have to go further. We will have to go on creating the useless. It is needed. It is needed to be occupied. A man of Tao is not a man of much activity. His actions are the most essential, which cannot be avoided. That which can be avoided, he avoids. He is so happy with himself. There is no need to move in excess. His activity is like inactivity. He does without there being anybody who is doing it. He is an empty boat moving in the sea, not going somewhere. Yet he does not know himself to be kind and gentle. This point, allow it to penetrate deep into your heart. Yet he does not know himself to be kind and gentle. Because if you know, you have missed the point. If you know that you are a simple man, you are not. This knowledge makes it complex. If you know that you are a man of religion, you are not. Because this cunning mind who knows is still there. When you are gentle and you don't know, when you are simple and you are not aware of it, it has become your nature, then you are not aware of it. When something is imposed, you are aware of it. When something is aligned, you are aware of it. When something is really natural, you are not aware. Look, somebody becomes rich, a newly rich, then he is aware of his house, of his swimming pool, of his riches. And you can see that he is not an aristocrat. Because he is so much after sowing. A newly rich man ordered 3 swimming pools in his garden. They were made. He was sowing to a friend. The friend was a little puzzled. He said, 3 swimming pools? For what? One will do. The newly rich man said, no, how one can do? One
for hot baths, one for cold baths. And the man asked, and the third, he said, for those who cannot swim. So the third is going to remain empty. You can see a man if he is newly acquired wealth, he will be sowing it. A real aristocrat is one who has forgotten that he is rich. A man of Tao is the aristocrat of the inner world. If somebody is sowing his religion, he is not really yet religious. The religion is still like a thorn. It is not nature. It hurts. He is eager to sow it. If you want to sow your simplicity, what type of simplicity is this? If you exhibit your gentleness, then it is simply cunningness, nothing gentle exists in it. A man of Tao is an aristocrat of the inner world. He is so attuned to it, there is no exhibition. Not only to you, he himself is not aware of it. He does not know that he is wise. He does not know that he is innocent. Because how you can know if you are innocent? Your knowledge will disturb the innocence. It is said, once it happened, a follower of Hazrat Muhammad came with Muhammad to the mosque for a prayer, the early morning prayer. And when they were returning back, many people, it was summer time, and many people were still asleep in their houses, or just on their street. Many people were still asleep. Early morning, summer morning. And the man very arrogantly said to Muhammad, Hazrat, what will happen to these sinners? They have not been to the morning prayer. And this man has gone only for the first time. Yesterday he was also asleep like these sinners. A newly rich wants to exhibit, even so to Muhammad. Hazrat, what will happen to these sinners? They have not been to the morning prayer and are still lazy and asleep. Muhammad stopped and he said, you go home, I will have to go to the mosque again. The man said, why? He said, that my morning prayer is wasted because of you. Keeping company with you has destroyed everything. I will have to do my prayer again. And you, remember please, never to come. It was better that you were asleep like others. At least they were not sinners then. Your prayer has done only one thing. It has given you the key to condemn others. The so-called religious is religious only to look at you with the condemning eye. He can say you are sinners. Go to your saints, so-called saints, look in their eyes. You will not find the innocence that should be there. You will find a calculating mind who is looking at you and thinking about the hell. You will be thrown in the hell and I will be in heaven. Because I have been praying so much 5 times a day. And I have been fasting so much. as if you can purchase heaven. These are the coins, fasting, prayers. These are the coins one is trying to bargain. If you see condemnation in the eyes of a saint, know well that he is a newly rich man. He is not aristocrat of the inner world. He has not yet become one with it. He knows it. And you know something only when it is separate from you. One thing has to be remembered here. Because of this, self-knowledge is impossible. You cannot know the self. Because whenever you know it, it is not the self. It is something else, something separate from you. The self is always the knower, never the known. So how can you know it? You cannot reduce it into an object. I can see at you how I can see at myself. Then who will be the seer and who will be the seen? No, the self cannot be known in the same way other things are known. Self-knowledge is not possible in the ordinary sense because the knower always transcends, always goes beyond. Whatsoever it knows, it is not that. The Upanishads say, nepi, nepi, not this, not that. They say, whatsoever you know, you are not this. Whatsoever you don't know, you are not that also. You are the one who knows. And this knower cannot be reduced to a known object. Self-knowledge is not possible. If your innocence comes out of your inner soul, you cannot know it. If you have imposed it from the outside, you can know it. If it is just like a dress you have put on, you know it. But it is not the very breath of your life. That innocence is cultivated, and a cultivated innocence is an ugly thing. A man of Tao does not know himself to be kind and gentle. He is gentle, but he doesn't know. He is kind, but he doesn't know. He is love, but he doesn't know. Because the love and the knower are not two. The gentleness, the kindness, the compassion and the knower are not two. No, they cannot be divided into the known and the knower. This is the inner aristocracy. When you have become so rich, you are not aware of it. When you are so rich, there is no need to exhibit it. I have heard it happened once. Henry Ford came to England. On the airport, he asked, inquired at the inquiry office about the cheapest hotel in the town. The man who was there at the office looked, and the face was famous. Henry Ford was known all over the world. Just the other day there were big pictures of him in the newspapers that he is coming. And he is asking for the cheapest hotel, and his coat looked as old as he himself. Man at the inquiry office asked, if I'm not misunderstanding, you are Mr. Henry Ford. If I remember well, I have seen your pictures. The man said, yes. Then the clerk was very much puzzled and he said, and you are asking for the cheapest hotel? And your coat looks as old as you yourself. And I have seen your son also coming. He always inquires about the best hotel. And he comes in the best of clothes. Henry Ford is reported to have said that his Mars son's behavior, is exhibitionist. He is not yet attuned. There is no need for me to stay in a costly hotel. Wherever I stay, I am Henry Ford. In the cheapest hotel also, I am Henry Ford. It makes no difference. My son is still new, afraid that if he stays in a cheap hotel, what people will think. And this coat, yes, this belongs to my father. But it makes no difference. I don't need new dresses. I am Henry Ford. Whatsoever the dress, even if I am standing naked, I am Henry Ford. It makes no difference at all. When you are really attuned, really rich in the inner world, you are not worried to show an exhibit. If you newly go to a temple, your prayer is a little louder than others. It has to be. You want to show. The showmanship is part of the ego. What you show is not the problem. You show, you exhibit, then the ego is there, the boat is not empty. And the man of Tao is an empty boat. He is gentle, not aware. He is innocent, not knowing. He is wise. That's why he can move as a fool, not worried. Whatsoever he does makes no difference. His wisdom is intact. He can afford to be foolish. You cannot afford. You are always afraid somebody may think you a fool. You are afraid if others think you to be a fool, you will start suspecting. If so many people think you a fool, your self-confidence will be lost. And if everybody goes on repeating that you are a fool, sooner or later you will come to believe it. Only a wise man cannot be deceived. He can appear as a fool. I have heard about one wise man who was known as the madman. Nobody knows about anything else about him, his name or anything. He was just known as the madman. He was a Jew. And Jews have created few really wise men. They have something of the inner source. That's why Jesus could be born there. This madman behaved in such a foolish way that the whole community became disturbed, because nobody knew what he is going to do. On the religious days, Yom Kippur, or on other festivals, the whole community was afraid, because this rabbi cannot be predicted. What he will do, how he will appear there, how he will behave. His prayers were also mad. Once he called the court, the Jewish court, all the 10 judges of the court. The court came because the rabbi has called, and he said, I have a case against God. So you decide how to punish this fellow, God. And I will give all the arguments which prove that God is unjust and a criminal. The people became very much afraid, the judges. But they had to listen because he was the rabbi, the chief of the temple. And he gave all the arguments like a liar in the court. He said, you created the world and now you send messengers how to renounce it. What foolishness! And you gave us desires. And now all your teachers are coming and saying, be desireless. So what do you think you are doing? And if we have committed any sins, it is really you who are the culprit. Because why you create desire? What the court should decide. And he was right. But the court decided this man has gone completely mad. So the court decided to expel this madman from the temple. But this man is really saying a fact, and he loves the God so much. It is a I-thou relationship, so intimate. He says, what you are doing? Enough, now stop. No more fooling. He must have loved the divine so much. He could behave that way. And it is said, the story is there, that the God immediately stopped when he called. He had to listen to this man. It is said that angels will ask, suddenly you stop, what happened? He said, that deaf madman, he is praying, I have to listen, because whatsoever he says is true. And he loves me so much that there is no need to follow any manners. In love, in hate, everything is permitted. Everything is allowed. This madman was passing. One woman came and she asked that, I'm longing and longing for a child. Now 40 years have passed, and if within 3-4 years the child is not coming, then there will be no possibility. So help me. The madman said, I can help, because my mother was in the same troubles. She waited and waited for 40 years, and no child. Then he went to Baal Sem, one mystic, and he told Baal Sem, and Baal Sem interfered. My mother gave a beautiful cap. Baal Sem put the cap on his head. He looked up and he said to God, what are you doing? This is unjust. And there is nothing wrong in the demand of this woman. So give her a child. And after 9 months, I was born. So the woman said, beaming, happy. She said, I will go home and I will bring you such a beautiful cap you may not have ever seen. Then the child will be born to me. Said the madman, you have missed. My mother never knew this story. My mother never knew this story. Your cap won too. You have missed. you cannot imitate religion. You cannot imitate prayer. Once you imitate, you have missed. So whenever people will come to this madman, he will say, don't imitate. Throw all the scriptures. When this madman died, he burnt all the books that were written about him. And the last thing he inquired, he said, go around the house to his disciples and have a search and tell me so I can die at ease, that nothing is left. Not even a single letter written by me, because people will start following, and when you follow, you miss. So everything was gathered and burnt. When everything was burnt, he said, no, I can die easily. I'm not leaving any traces behind. But this type of wise man is not afraid. How a wise man can be afraid of anybody? What you say is meaningless. He can, to all appearances, be a fool. He need not exhibit his wisdom. Have you observed about yourself? You are always trying to exhibit your wisdom. In search of finding a victim to whom you can show your knowledgeability, your knowledge. Just in search. In hunt. Somebody weaker than you, and you will jump, and you will show your wisdom. A wise man need not be an exhibitionist. Whatsoever is, he is not aware, he is not in any hurry to search. If you have to find it, you will have to make efforts. If you have to know whether he is gentle or not, that's yours. That's going to be your discovery. He does not struggle to make money. And he does not make a virtue of poverty. Remember this. It is very easy to make money. And it is also very easy to make virtue of poverty. But these two types are not different. A man goes on making money and then suddenly he gets frustrated. He has achieved and nothing is gained. He renounces. Then poverty becomes the virtue. Then he lives the life of a poor man. And then he says, this is the only real life. This is religious life. This man is the same, nothing has changed. The pendulum moved to the left, but it has gone to the other extreme. He does not struggle to make money. This you will understand. The other part is more difficult. And he doesn't make a virtue of poverty. He is neither poor nor rich. He is not making any effort for money. He is not making any effort to be poor. Whatsoever happens, he allows it to happen. If a palace happens, he will be in the palace. If the palace disappears, he will not look for it. Whatsoever is happening, he will be with it. His bliss cannot be disturbed. He is not struggling for money. He is not struggling for power. He goes his way without relying on others. This you can understand easily. He goes his way without relying on others and doesn't pride himself on walking alone. The opposite has to be immediately dropped. You depend on others, your wife, your children, your father, mother, friends, society. Then suddenly you drop and you escape to the Himalayas. And then you start priding yourself that I live alone. I don't need anybody. I'm free of that world. Then you are still not alone. Because your aloneness still depends on the world. How you can be alone if there was not a world to leave? How you could be alone if there was not a society to denounce? How you could be alone if there was not a wife and children and a family to leave behind? Your aloneness depends on them. How you can be poor if there was no money to be left? Your poverty depends on your riches. No, a perfect man, a man who is really a sage, the man of Tao, he goes his way without relying on others. Because if you rely on others, you will suffer. If you rely on others, you will always be in bondage. If you rely on others, you will become dependent and weak. But that doesn't mean that pride yourself that you walk alone. Walk alone, but don't pride. Then you can move in the world without being a part of it. Then you can live in a family without being a member of it. Then you can be a husband without being a husband. Then you can possess without being purchased by your purchases. Then the world is there out but not within. Then you are there but not corrupted by it. This is true loneliness, moving in the world without being touched by it. But if you pride, you have missed. If you think that I am become somebody, the boat is not empty. Then again, you have fallen a victim of the ego. The man of Tao remains unknown. Perfect virtue produces nothing. No self is true self, and the greatest man is nobody. Listen. The man of Tao remains unknown. Not that nobody will know him, but that is up to you to discover. He is not making any effort to be known. Because any effort to be known comes from the ego. Because ego cannot exist when you are unknown. It exists only when you are known. It exists, feeds when people look at you, when they pay attention to you, when you are somebody important, significant. But how you can be significant if nobody knows you? When the whole world knows you, then you are significant. That's why people are so much after fame. And if fame cannot be achieved, then they will settle for being notorious, but not for being unknown. If people cannot praise you, then you will settle that they should condemn you, but they should not be indifferent to you. I have heard about a politician. He had a great following once, because in politics everything is moment. Many followers, many who appreciated him when he was not in power. Because when you are not in power, you look very innocent. Because when there is no power, what you can do, how you can harm? So the real nature comes only to be known when you get power. Look at the Gandhians in India before independence, so saintly. And now, everything has gone to the opposite end. Now they are the most corrupted ones. What happened? A simple laugh. When they were not in power, they were like doves, innocent. When the power comes, they become like serpents, cunning, corrupted, exploiting. The real nature is known only when you have power. When you can harm, then it is known whether you will harm or not. Lord Acton has said, power corrupts. And power corrupts absolutely. No, that is not right. Power never corrupts. It only brings corruption out. How the power can corrupt? You were already corrupt, but there were no opportunities. You were already ugly, but you were standing in darkness. Now you are standing in light. So will you say light makes you ugly? No, light only reveals. A politician was very much appreciated, loved. He had a charismatic personality. Then he came into power and everybody became against. And then he was thrown out of power. His name became notorious. He was condemned everywhere. So he had to leave his town because people will not allow him to live there. He had done such harm. So with his wife, he was looking for a new residence in a new town. Many towns he traveled just to look and see where he should stay. Then in one town, people started throwing stones at him. He said, this will be the right place. We should choose this town. The wife said, are you mad? Have you gone crazy? The people are throwing stones. The politician said, at least they are not indifferent. Indifference hurts you more. Because ego cannot exist in indifference. Whether be for me or against for me, ego can exist. But don't be indifferent to me, because then how I can exist? How the ego can exist? The man of power remains unknown. That means he is not seeking people who should know him. If they want to know, they should seek him. Perfect virtue produces nothing. This is one of the basis of Taoist life. Perfect virtue produces nothing. Because when you are perfectly virtuous, nothing is needed. When you are perfectly virtuous, there is no desire. There is no motivation. You are perfect. How perfection can move? Only imperfection moves. Only imperfection desires to produce something. So a perfect artist never paints a picture. And a perfect musician throws his sitar. A perfect archer breaks his bow and throws it. And a perfect man like Buddha is absolutely useless. What Buddha has produced? A poetry? A sculpture? A painting? A society? What Buddha has produced? He seems to be absolutely unproductive. He has done nothing. Perfect virtue produces nothing because it needs nothing. Production comes out of desire. Production comes because you are imperfect. You create something as a substitute because you feel unfulfilled. When you are absolutely fulfilled, why you should create? How you can create? then you yourself have become the glorious creation. Then the inner being itself is so perfect, nothing is needed. Perfect virtue produces nothing. If the world is virtuous, all utilitarian goals will be lost. If the world is really virtuous, there will be play and no production. Then the whole thing will become just a game. You enjoy, but you don't need it. A perfect sage is absolutely useless. No self is true self. When you feel that you are not, for the first time you are. Because the self is nothing but a synonym for the ego. That's why Buddha, Lao Tse, Chuang Tse say, they all say there is no self, no Atma. Not that there is not. They say there is no Atma, there is no self, because your ego is so cunning, it can hide behind it. You can say, Aham Brahmasmi, I am the Brahma, Anadha, I am the God, and the ego can hide behind it. Buddha says there is nobody to claim. There is no self within you. Buddha says you are like the onion. You peel, you go on peeling the covers, finally nothing remains. Your mind is like an onion. Go on peeling, this is what meditation is, go on peeling, and a moment comes, nothing is left. That nothingness is your true self. No self is true self. When the boat is empty, only for the first time you are in the boat. And the greatest man is nobody. It happened. Buddha renounced the kingdom. Then he was searching from one forest to another, from one ashram to another, from one master to another, walking. He had never walked without shoes. He was not just a beggar. He was passing on a river. By the side of the river he walked on the sand. His footprints were left. Then he was resting in the side of a tree. One astrologer he was coming back from Kashi, from the seat of learning. He has become proficient in astrology. He has become perfect. Now he is coming back to his hometown to practice. He has become a great doctor of astrology. He looked at the footprint on the wet sand. He became disturbed because this footprint cannot belong to a man who walks on the sand without shoes. In such a summer, hot noon, this feet belongs to a great emperor, a Chakravarti. A Chakravarti is the emperor who rules the whole world. All the symbols are there that this man is a Chakravarti, an emperor of the whole world, of the six continents. So why a Chakravarti should walk in such a summer afternoon, so hot, naked, without any shoes, on the sand? It is impossible. He was carrying his most valuable books. He thought, if this is possible, I should throw these books in the river and forget astrology forever. Because this is absurd. It is very, very difficult to find a man who has his feet up in Chakravarti. In millions of years, a man becomes a Chakravarti. And what this Chakravarti is doing here? So he followed the footprints and he reached. He looked at Buddha, who was sitting, resting under the tree, with closed eyes. He became more disturbed. This astrologer became absolutely disturbed, because the face also was of a Chakravarti. But the man looked a beggar, with his beggar bowl just there by the side, with torn clothes. But the face looked like that of a Chakravarti. So what to do? He asked. He said, I'm very much disturbed. Put me at ease. Only one question I have to ask. I have seen and studied your footprint. It should belong to a Chakravarti, to a great emperor who rules all over the world. The whole earth is his kingdom. And you are a beggar. So what should I do? Should I throw my all astrology books and my 12 years of effort in Kashi has been a wastage? And those people there are fools. I have wasted the most important part of my life. So keep me at ease. Tell me, what should I do? Buddha said, you need not worry. This will not happen again. You take your books, go to the town, start your practice. You don't bother about me. I was born to be a Chakravarti. These footprints carry my past. All the footprints carry your past. Your lines on the hand, your palm, carry your past. That's why astrology, palmistry is always true about the past, never so true about the future, and absolutely untrue about the Buddha. Because one who throws his whole past moves into the unknown. You cannot predict his future. But Buddha said, you will not come to such a troublesome man again. You don't bother. This will not happen again. Take it as an exception. But the astrologer says, few more questions. I would like to know who you are. Really? Am I seeing a dream? A Chakravarti? Sitting like a beggar? Who are you? Are you an emperor in disguise? Buddha said, no. Then the astrologer asked, but your face looks so beautiful, so calm, so filled with inner silence. And who you are? Are you an angel from paradise? Buddha said, no. The astrologer asked one more question. It looks not good, not mannerly to ask, but you have created the desire and urge. Are you a human being? Then, if you are not an emperor, a Chakravarti, you are not a deva from paradise, then are you a human being? And Buddha said, no, I am nobody. I don't belong to any form, to any name. The astrologer said, you have disturbed me more now. What do you mean? This is what Buddha means. And the greatest man is nobody. You can be somebody, but you cannot be the greatest. Somebody is always somewhere in the world. And who is somebody? You are the major. You said this man is great. But who is the major? You. The spoon is the major of the ocean. You say this man is great. You say. And many like you say this man is great and he becomes great because of you. No. In this world, whosoever who is somebody cannot be the greatest. Because the ocean cannot be measured by stones. And you are all these stones measuring the ocean. No, it is not possible. So the really greatest will be nobody amongst you. What does it mean when Chuang Tzu says the greatest will be nobody? It means it will be immeasurable. You cannot measure. You cannot label. You cannot categorize. You cannot say, who is this? He simply escapes measurement. He simply goes beyond and beyond and beyond. And a teaspoon falls on the ground. Immeasurable. God must be nobody. He cannot be somebody because who will make him somebody? You? Then you have measured. Then you have become greater than the God. Then the teaspoon has become greater than the ocean. No. God cannot be measured. He will remain a nobody. I am reminded of this madman again, this Jew. He used to say in his prayers that God, you and me, two are strangers in this world. So one day a disciple heard his prayer that he was saying, God, you and me, two are strangers in this world. The disciples asked, what do you mean? God and you is strangers. He said, he is also nobody and I am also nobody. Immeasurable. Neither you can measure him, nor you can measure me. Somebody means you have measured. You have labeled, categorized, you have known. Nobody means he will remain unknowable. Howsoever you know, whatsoever you know, your knowledge will not adjust. You will know that this is not the boundary. And the more you come in intimacy, the greater he becomes, the more immeasurable. A moment comes, you simply throw your teaspoon. You simply stop the effort to measure. And only then you are intimate with the great man. The man of thought.
Enough for today.